It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.
Welcome to Dunzo. This is a podcast that explores hookups and breakups of famous lovers and friends, both real and fake, and all the discarded pop culture of yesteryear. I'm your host, Troy McEady. You guys, welcome back to another spooky episode of Dunzo. I'm more excited about this spooky episode than I have been so far. I am, for many, many reasons. For one thing, I am joined by true friend of the pod, Vanessa Cordero. Vanessa, how are you?
Hi, I was very tired at the end of a very long work day, but I have all my energy back. I'm on a Diet Coke high. We started talking about this a little bit, and I'm back. I'm back, baby.
I'm so happy that you're here. For one thing, I love talking about movies and TV with you already. Ugh. Like, I just feel like that's kind of our vibe.
It's our thing.
And we haven't talked about a horror movie together. So this is a big deal for me.
And especially this one. I'm so glad we, like, lines intersected on this one. Because yes. I didn't know. I like horror movies, but I am also a chicken baby. So okay. I don't want any demon or haunting movies. Even though I don't believe in any of it, it's still too real because I was brought up Catholic. And even though it's non-practicing, it scars you for life.
I get it.
So I don't need demons. And then haunting, like The Conjuring and all those, no. Mm-hmm. No, ma'am. I don't need that.
What's your choice genre? Like your choice horror genre?
My choice horror genre would probably be like Scream. Like it's like this new sort of like the renaissance of horror where it's still horror, there's still scares, but there's like a certain amount of humor.
Right.
And kind of like a smart type of snappy humor in it. Or what we're covering today. Like true 80s
camp. Yeah.
Not just because it's set at camp, but camp with a capital C.
Yes.
The John Waters, like magic wand sort of waved over the whole production kind of vibe. Yes.
Yes. Camp and camp, honey.
Campy camp.
So we're talking about Sleepaway Camp today, which is, you know, for horror fans, this is a movie that I think means a lot to a lot of people. It's one of those, like, I wrote in my notes that when I was a teenager and I discovered this movie, you know, I went through this whole period of like trying to watch like as many camp movies as I could, like cult classic sort of like films that I thought would make me cool. I was like, this is a cult classic and people like it, so I have to see it. You know what I mean? You go through that phase as a young person. And this was one of those movies that I always read stuff about and people saying that it had this crazy ending that you wouldn't believe and blah, blah, blah. And after I saw it, I was just like, I feel like I am officially a part of a true cult of people that have seen this movie. It's like there's before and after seeing the end of this movie.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. It is, like we were saying a little bit before we started recording, it is probably one of, if not the most truly shocking endings. Like you cannot see this coming.
No.
If you do, then start a 900 psychic line.
Right.
If you can see this coming, because I consider myself a pretty savvy movie watcher, film watcher, and I can usually suss out, if not exactly what's going to happen, like, oh, you can kind of see where this is heading. And you might see shades of what's happening. You might get hints of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody saw that ending, saw this ending coming.
No, and I'm going to say, before we start, I did want to make a point to say this, that you guys will message me all the time and say, like, I've never even seen this movie, but I love the episode, or, like, I don't even watch whatever, but I like the episode. I really advise you not to listen to this if you've never seen the movie. I really do. And I'm being 100% serious.
Yeah. It's on Amazon right now. So if you have Amazon Prime, or if you have a password you can borrow, this is when you call in that favor. It's on right now. It's such a good, bad movie.
Yes.
And if you watch it the first time and you kind of get the, like, oh my God, of it all. Mm-hmm. And then you watch it again and you start to see how many layers there are to the movie, whether it's intentional or not, I'm not sure.
Yes.
But there's a lot to this movie, I think.
But see, that to me is all the stuff. Like, everybody has theories as to what is purposeful in this movie and what isn't purposeful. And I know that the director of the movie has been asked for years, like, what was supposed, you know, what did all this mean? And did this mean a thing? And he's just sort of, like, head scratchy about it. But it's like, the more you watch it, it's like, these things have to be rooted in something. Mm-hmm. It's just so layered. Every time I've ever seen it, I'm always like trying to figure it out. And I don't know. I think that that's one of the greatest things about it, is that it's technically a terrible, it's a bad movie. Like, it's poorly acted. The budget is $2. But at the same time, it's great. And it's, like, it's smart. And it's like, creative. And it's so well executed on a shoestring budget. You know, like, there's so much to love about it.
And once you watch it and you kind of get over the, like, you enjoy, like, the campiness of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you enjoy it in that way. When you watch it again, or when you kind of revisit it, you can start to see all these other things, like how much the setting was it not intentional? Mm-hmm. How even, like, I noticed something about costumes, and you see themes everywhere. And if it was intentional, the director's a fucking genius.
I know.
If it truly wasn't intentional, it is the most serendipitous chain of events, because it ended up accidentally. I mean, okay, I told Troy this before we started recording. I watched it with my boyfriend was the one who introduced me to this movie in the last couple years. So I had heard of it, that it had a twist ending, but I didn't know what the twist ending was. I saw the iconic scene that is Troy's background right now countless times. Like, if you've been on the internet in any capacity, you've seen that still from the movie. But he is a research scientist, and he happens to have a special interest in gender identity theory. So that right away should kind of set you up for what's about, like, the ride we're about to go on.
Yeah.
Or what are you talking about, a campy 80s horror movie set in summer camp and gender identity theory?
Yeah.
As the genius Troy said, buckle your wigs.
Clip them down, girls.
Snap them down. Seriously. Put in an extra couple snaps, because it's going to blow your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
So tell me your experience with seeing this movie for the first time. Like, did you like it? Or were you like, what the fuck did I just watch? Like, how did you feel about it?
I loved it.
Okay, good.
Because I do love this genre, and I enjoyed just how bad it was. It was like special effects that don't hold up over time. Even like the print of the film that we see now is different than the original. It's much more cleaned up. And when you watch it on television screens that weren't invented when this was filmed, you're literally seeing things that you weren't supposed to see. There's a scene we'll get to where you see something in silhouette, and in the current print that's out, you actually see the person who was standing there and being filmed, and it's not the person it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And if you see it now without knowing that, you think like, wait a minute, they just revealed the killer by accident. And they didn't, because it's not the right actor. It's a different actor standing in for someone else.
It's so jarring.
Yeah. And by the time we got to like, how James Earl Jones's dad is in this. pedophilia as a comedic, lighthearted plot point.
Yeah.
In
the opening of the movie, by the way.
Yeah, the opening. There's like a psycho, very like what's it called? Like a psycho mom character.
Yes.
Where she's truly unhinged, and you have to wonder, and this is like in the first 10 minutes of the movie, where you ask yourself, like, is this supposed to be like this? Like, this is the take they went, like, this is what they wanted.
Right.
And it's one of those things that in this, like, multiple watchings, you realize, like, oh yeah, that's exactly how it had to happen.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they wanted, because just wait. And then we got like towards the ending of the movie, and when the reveal happened, my boyfriend did not prep me for it. He just he just like turned and watched with like big eyes, just watched my reaction to it.
That's
and
what I always do to people.
The face that she's making in your background, that's my face when I was watching the movie. And it was like a horror, like, wait, what's happening? Wait, what? Why is her face like that?
And you're right about the characters. Like, the way that you put it is perfect, because when you watch the movie for the first time, you do sort of go through this thing of like, is this supposed to be this way? Or is she supposed to be, is she just a terrible actor? Is she weird? Are all these people acting really bad, or am I missing something? But then when you watch it a few times, it's true. You are sort of like, this is all exactly how it should be. And you learn to appreciate the weirdness of the acting choices, specifically from the mom, who is just, you know, like, I've read that, like, that the opening of the movie when they, when she comes down the stairs and she's like, Angela, Ricky, you know, like, that was the first scene that they filmed with her. And it was one of the first scenes that they filmed of the movie, and they didn't know that she was gonna go full wackadoo bananas. So they were like, should we be acting weird like this? Like, the director didn't know she was gonna do that. Nobody on set knew she was going to choose to make the mom this like Looney Tunes batshit woman.
Oh yeah.
Nobody knew why, but they were like, we love it. You know, and it's so great.
Oh.
Angela.
Can I tell you that I can't remember, I think I was trying to just get the actors' names for my notes, like trying to like make sure I had the actors' real names. Right. When I looked up Mel, who was the owner of the camp, he went to Yale School of Drama.
Really?
Uh-huh. And had like a background, like a Broadway, or like at least who was an on-stage actor. So he was like an actor with a capital A actor.
What? Yes. I mean, I guess he is sort of like theatrical in the sense that he acts with his face.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But you see him and he's like, he could be like Mel from Mel's Diner, if anybody's old enough to get that reference, or had Nick at Night or something and can get that reference. So he's not a refined looking actor. The performance he gives no hint of like a, you know, a stage actor. But then I guess it's on rewatches where you realize like he has to chew up the scenery like that, because it's just adding to this
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Like, insanity that's going on in this camp and that you should be feeling. Like, it, that crazy kind of off-kilter feeling that starts to happen. Like, that's, mm-hmm. it's got to be intentional. And if it's not, then this is why the movie is so great.
Right. Yeah.
Even like, just, it's a force within itself that it makes you feel like you have, like, you're off center, like you've been, yes. somehow, like, you've been tilted on, your axis is tilted while you're watching this movie, and you kind of have to accept.
And it affects every single person who watches it in that exact same way the first time they see it, where they feel a little bit off, they feel a little bit confused, thoroughly enjoying it,
yes.
like laughing along, but also laughing at. And just shocked to the marrow of your bone, as I always say, like, shocked in a way that, like, really sticks with you. Like, I don't really, I can remember movies that have impacted me in my life that had endings where I was like, oh, wow, that, like, a memento moment or something where I'm like, wow, like,
yeah.
you know, that was really well thought out and really amazing. But nothing really, nothing has ever made me feel like this. Like, I remember watching this for the first time and literally, like, physically, like, standing up. Like, I stood up. I'll never forget it. I was watching it and I stood the fuck up because I didn't know what to do physically. I was like, I can't sit here. This is insane. I got to get up and walk towards the TV.
There's almost like a kind of discomfort that comes yes, with watching this movie.
Very much.
But it's not... And it's not like uncomfortable, like Bridesmaid, like Bridesmaids, like Kristen Wiig, a joke that's taken too far mm-hmm. for comedic effect. There's like, oh, something ain't right.
Yes.
And it's got me like a little bit weirded out.
And it lingers. And
it, you kind of think like, maybe it's the overacting. Maybe it's mm-hmm. like the kind of the bad quality mm-hmm. of this movie that's leaving you sort of like, mm?
Right. yeah.
But it's not. It's just, it's like the force of the movie, and that's the ride you have to take. And then yep. all of a sudden at the end, like, it is, it's a stand-up ending.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't stand up and walk towards the screen, or just stand up and just, like, look around, like,
yeah,
wait. Like, what the fuck just happened?
Like, was I supposed to see that? It almost feels yeah. like you've, like, opened up a door that you weren't supposed to open up or something. Yeah. You're like, oh my God, sorry. Yeah. Like, yeah. like, your reaction, whatever it is to you, is physical. You may get up, you yeah. may cover your face. I watched it with my best friend Katie, and I she's a really big horror fan, and that's, like, a thing that bonds us. And I was like, I'm so excited to just see your face at the end of the movie. And she just screamed. She just sat on my couch and screamed for a really long time. And it was so funny.
I think I grabbed my boyfriend, like, I grabbed his arm and just, like, my mouth, jaw dropped, grabbed his arm and, like, looked at him and just went like, what?
Yeah.
But how? Like, explain this to me.
I guess I should give a quick little synopsis of, like, just generally what this movie is about. So this movie takes place at a summer camp in the 80s, and it opens up with this family that you're sort of not clear on how they're connected or how they know each other or, like, what's going on. And it's the mid 80s, so you're like, you know, there's two men and you're like, oh, it, you know, it's just kind of, like, presented in a way that is confusing on purpose. Mm-hmm. But it opens with these kids and they're hanging out with their dad on a boat, and a boating accident happens at the beginning of the film where the dad ends up dead, and you don't really know what happened. It's just sort of like an accident happens, he's dead, people are screaming.
Yeah, there's a lot of screaming, and then there's just, like, bodies slowly floating by in the water.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a ripped up
vest, and the kids are wearing the vest, so you know that a kid got hurt. You don't know who or what happened, really. Right. And then it skips to these two teenagers named Ricky and Angela, and they're getting ready to go to summer camp. And the whole movie revolves around their time at the summer camp in New Jersey. By the way, all of the kids in the movie are, their accents are amazing. Hey, Angela, why are you so fucking weird for?
Yeah.
You working with half a deck or something?
Can I tell you, when we get to her character, we can go more into her, but Judy, in my notes, I wrote, Judy is Danielle Staub.
Oh my god. I can't handle that.
Is she not?
Oh my god. She literally is Danielle grown up. Oh my god.
Appearance wise, attitude wise, stink eye wise. Yeah.
Holy shit. Yeah, the kids all have such distinctive personalities. They're all so specific and like and memorable. But yeah, while they're at this camp, people are mysteriously dying, and they sort of lead you to believe that it's this kid Ricky, who seems to have some rage issues. Ricky's always just going fucking off on people.
Yeah.
Hey, you fucking big cocksucking piece of shit. I'll kick your ass, you cocksucking son of a bitch. Go fuck your mom. He's like the best. He's so good at cussing.
Yeah. I heard that was his audition.
Really?
That the audition was like, okay, so we want you to just scream and yell obscenities. And kind of like what he does in the movie, like they had him do that on tape for his audition.
He has one of my favorite lines in the history of a film, in the history of all film, where the kid says, eat shit and die, Ricky. And he goes, eat shit and live, Bill. My God, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? God. But yeah, so people mysteriously end up dying at this camp, and you don't really know who's doing it, but you're led to believe that it's Ricky because he's always angry. And then and Angela is mostly mute. She doesn't really talk, and everybody at the camp thinks she's weird and they all bully her. And all of these really strange things happen in this camp. And at the end of the film, now this is it. You can't go back now. It's official. If you want to fucking ruin this amazing experience for yourself and keep listening, even though you've never seen the film, fine. I don't approve of it, but do whatever you want. This is the moment where you're about to be spoiled. The
point of no return.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. At the end of the movie, it's discovered that Angela has been killing people at this camp the whole time. And Angela, when she was younger, when the boat accident happened, is it that her brother died and then
Well, it's Angela and Peter are the two little kids on the boat. And for the full Jersey connection, the young Peter was played by Mike the Situation's brother.
Yes, he's so cute.
Okay, so the two of them are on the boat and one of them dies and you think it's Peter, because we have Angela in front of us, but the reality is that Angela died, and Ricky's mom took in Peter because his father was killed. And there's no mom in the picture; it's never explained, but there's no mom in the picture. And there's in a flashback, you see Peter's got his head all bandaged up, and she says that she's always wanted a little girl. And she already has a boy. So two boys, no, that just won't do. No, that won't do at all. And she makes Peter grow up as Angela.
Yeah.
She raises him as her. So
Angela, what a pretty name.
All of a sudden, like all these things start to fit into place that had happened earlier in the movie. Like that opening sort of scene where she's sending them off to camp. There's this weird discussion about their doctor's physical, like the physical right. exam that they have to take with them to camp. And she's a doctor, apparently. So she filled out their physicals, but she makes this weird big deal, like, and don't tell anybody where you got them. No, that won't do at all. Mm-hmm. And she did it because you realize if they had gone to a real doctor or a regular doctor, they would have found out that Angela mm-hmm. was a boy.
Right.
Because what you see at the end, the reveal of how you find out that Angela is actually Peter is a full frontal dick shot. And tis not is... like a, yeah, tis not a 13, 14 year old boy. It's a grown man.
Right.
It's a grown dick with the weirdest, like almost paper mache looking mask on.
Right.
And they keep cutting back and forth between the actress who played Angela with her, she's already got these big, beautiful eyes, big eyes bugging out and mouth open, like grotesquely open. And the mask was made, I guess, from her doing that face, but it's clearly a mask. It's the worst fucking special effects ever.
Yeah.
And so it's just this like weird paper mache little girl head on a grown man's body with his like dick out.
Right. And it lingers. The thing that makes it so eerie is that it lasts for a long, I mean, it feels like 10 minutes that it's just like,
it's too long.
Maybe a minute too long. And that's the thing that makes it so jarring is like, it doesn't like let up. It like yeah. forces you to look at it. And one of the yeah. craziest things about this movie is the soundtrack is so like, the soundtrack is just instruments going, oh, wee, really loud. So when things like that happen, it's like, it's really intense.
But that's part of the whole experience where you have felt uncomfortable in the movie the entire time. And sometimes it's because of the overacting mm-hmm. and the sort of almost uncomfortable factor that the overacting is so big mm-hmm. that there's almost like too much acting happening up on screen.
Yes.
And then sometimes it's that weird, shrill, like dentist drill movie, like a soundtrack.
Yes.
And it all leads to this just like uncomfortable moment where I think the backstory is that the person they got to disrobe, like the person they got to play the stunt dick, was just some guy that was probably an extra who did not want his name in the credits. Like he and then they've never found out who he is.
Yeah.
Because he's so mortified and embarrassed. And another famous part is right before you get the reveal of the, you know, who of Angela's actual identity, if you look in the background of the shot, you can see the actor changing behind a sand dune. You can see that there's like some sort of action going on, and you just maybe think like, oh, that's just a person on the beach. It's the actor you're about to see naked, taking his clothes off, getting ready to run into the shot.
And didn't they get him like wasted?
Yeah.
Like got him hammered.
Yeah, because that's the only way he'd do it.
So he just stood there drunk with his dick out for like 7 straight minutes.
Oh, it's so long and uncomfortable. And then you're uncomfortable because it's obviously an adult mm-hmm. body. Mm-hmm. But you're supposed to be looking at like a 13, 14 year old boy.
Right.
So you're also just like, do I look away?
Yeah.
Is something else going to happen?
Yeah. Like, is this the end of the film?
Yeah.
And then it just turns lime green and it is the end of the film.
And you just sat there in your living room, probably next to a friend or something, just like,
what did I just watch?
What the fuck was that?
Well, now that we have officially spoiled it, let's talk about what the fuck this movie means.
Oh,
can we do that? Because I need to expel these thoughts. Yes. Like, there's so many, first of all, if you read anything about Sleepaway Camp, if you read any sort of like listicle or whatever, Sleepaway Camp is known as one of the most queer horror movies mm-hmm. of all time. It's like very weirdly homoerotic sometimes. And I've watched this movie enough times to like, because when I first saw it, I was like, is this supposed to be homoerotic? Like, or am I just, is it just that I like, because I love like an 80s, like camp counselor guy. That's like sort of my aesthetic as a kid that grew up watching horror movies. Like, I love a guy in like athletic shorts working at a camp that's like beautiful, you know?
Right.
So I was like, am I supposed to be in love with all these men, or is it like, what's happening when I was younger? And then it's like, no, you get older and you realize like, it's purposely homoerotic in ways sometimes that feel, it almost feels like a parody of a gay porn film. Yeah. And a lot of people say that, that it feels like it's, at any moment, it could turn into a gay porn.
That softball scene?
Can we talk?
Okay. Well, I'll back up like just a tiny bit. And this is one of the things that my boyfriend kept texting me about, like, you seem to not be interested in this. And I want to make sure that you like understand and explore this. And I was like, no, I got it. I'm saving it up.
Yes.
But the camp setting itself is what, there's so much weird, it's not just sexualization, it's hyper-sexualization.
Right.
And the camp setting sets you up for that because most of camp is segregated, boys and girls.
Yes.
Separate cabins, separate sports, separate activities, and they don't always mingle together. Mm-hmm. So because it's normal sort of and expected to have the boys and girls separated in camp, it kind of, the gender roles become a major plot point without you really noticing it. Because it's not out of the ordinary that the boys would be doing one thing and the girls would be doing another thing. Mm-hmm. So separating them to set up that hypersexualization, you don't notice it. And it doesn't feel like manipulated. It's just, it's the camp setting that so you know that they're going to be separated. So in the very beginning, you do see, and I thought for the first viewing, you just think this is bad 80s clothes and hair.
Right.
And
yes.
Haha, how funny. We're looking at something from the 80s. Look at those little wake me up before you go wham shorts.
Yes.
And then when you can watch it again, you realize like, wait, only the boys are in the super short shorts. There are so many midriff shirts, so many half shirts on boys in this movie.
Yeah.
It's a Johnny Depp in Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes.
But on everybody.
Literally.
Half sexy football jerseys on all the fellas. Mesh tank tops and shirts on the fellas. And then they're all in, they all start playing softball. There's like a softball game that's going on. I fully expected it to just dissolve into a porn scene, like an orgy.
Because the shorts are like, it's like, it's almost like Tiny doesn't even do them justice. They are like
balls are about to pop out of the bottom of these shorts.
Yeah. And there's an,
I was looking, I mean, they're underage, but I was looking because I was just like
what's happening?
Wait, this is not safe for us to watch.
Yes.
And the guys, they start doing like, in the very beginning, it's sort of like, oh, it's just the typical like, what are you, chicken or something? Why don't we make a bet? I'll bet you $5 our team wins.
Right.
But then it starts to get like aggressive, like the bad sportsmanship starts to get aggressive. And it's not that they're acting it badly. It's that it's written that way. It has to be written that way. That you almost feel that these guys are going to go at it.
Yeah.
They hate each other so much. And it's like this weird sexual tension on the softball field. And then there's another scene later where there's a fight at a dance in like the mess hall. And it's just the boys start fighting. And it's like a Looney Tunes cartoon.
Literally.
Little tornado on the ground. It's just adolescent boy arms and legs. It's just adolescent boy limbs. And I got so uncomfortable watching it. Like, they're children and they're like almost like Greco-Roman wrestling. Like,
yeah. For no reason, they just jump on a pile together.
Yeah, they just all pile up on each other. And it's just this weird, like, they're like half naked.
I know.
all up on each other. Are we supposed to be watching this? Like, this is...
Well, then there's, like, the older guys.
Yeah.
Then there's, like, the camp, you know, the counselors and, like, the older guys at camp that are, like, full on, like, dazed and confused, but, like, if only the guys in that movie were in tiny... Like, it is... It's, like, honestly so hard to describe, and it's crazy because there's no... There's no, like, male gaze moment in this movie for Mm-mm. the girls. The women in this movie are not sexualized ever, uh-uh. really, at all. Like, even the slutty girl, Judy, who's supposed to be, like, the slutty villain, like, you don't see any part of her body. I mean, she's in a bathing suit, but, like, it's not... She just so happens to be in a bathing suit. It's never, like, the camera panning up and down her body. Yeah. Or
and her body itself isn't, like, overly developed. She's
right.
She's a fairly average size. She looks like a young teen girl, but she's right. not being shown as like a vamp or anything.
Totally.
Like there's yeah, no close up on the breasts or the butt or anything. And there is just one moment where the like older campers are trying to get the girls to go skinny dipping because they're like, what do you want to do?
Oh God, yeah.
Like, you know, 15 naked guys and 5 girls. Like they need more girls. And they try to get these group of girls to go skinny dipping with them. And it's such a fast scene because they're like, come on, come skinny dipping with us. And the girls are just, no.
Like, no.
And that's it. The end of the scene.
Yeah. And the girls go. And they're like, and you guys don't know how to have any fucking fun.
Yeah. Where in any other camp movie, that would have been the cue when like the 25-year-old playing the 13-year-old like yes. takes her top off.
Absolutely.
But the girls are just like, yeah, no, we're not doing this. Bye.
Yeah.
There's one girl that goes with one of my least favorite characters, Kenny. I think I called him Blue Oyster Cult Kenny because he had a Blue Oyster Cult t-shirt. He's the worst, like, horny teen boy.
Yeah.
Because he wants to get this girl alone, and he gets her, somehow gets her alone on in this canoe, and then terrorizes her. By like horrible. Rocking the canoe back and forth and then tipping it over and she falls into the water. And then he's like, is that a snake I see? Oh, I think that's a snapping turtle. So he wants to get her alone and he gets it. He gets what he wants. But then he just like fucks with her until she literally swims away and she wants nothing to do with him. She just swims away from him.
Don't you love though that she swims away? She's very blatantly gone. Like she yeah. swam away. And what's her name? Like Bridget or something?
Some yeah, I don't remember.
And he's like, Bridget, hey Bridget, Bridget, come out. And then he starts singing this really weird song. Like
he starts singing to himself under the canoe. The canoe's like flipped over and he's like in the space underneath it. And then he just starts like doo-doo-doo, like just singing to himself like a fucking idiot.
He's like, hey yo, baby, hey yo, baby. Hey yo, baby. It's like this really weird, like out of context moment that doesn't logically make any sense.
No.
To think she's at the boat when you just saw her swim away. Yeah, he's the worst of the boys.
He's the absolute worst. And then, you know, well, we've already spoiled the big spoiler, so
right.
you'll see Kenny ends up a corpse with a snake crawling out of his mouth.
Yeah.
One of those amazing special effects where it's totally 100% a believable dead corpse.
And like, and yeah, it's like totally unexpected. Like you said, you are waiting for, it's like, here we go. Here's the boot. Here's the jiggle TV moment.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, all of the boys strip nude. 20 yeah. men all of a sudden are nude and just like running arms linked to jump in like a Yaya sisterhood
yeah.
to jump in the fucking lake together. And yeah. the girls, and then on top of it, there are so many random sort of throwaway, like, gay jokes. Like there's a moment when they're about to play softball and I don't remember who says it to him, but Ricky's like up to bat and one of the guys goes, fuck a man, Ricky. Who says that? Who even says that?
But you know what they never say, which for an 80s movie is almost a miracle? The F word.
Never
said.
They never say it.
I believe that Judy throws a queer at Angela. She says, like,
yeah.
why don't you ever shower with the girls? What are you, queer or something?
Queer something?
But that's the only time any sort of like sexual, like sexual, anything like about sexuality becoming like an insult,
right,
ever happens in the movie. And yeah, there's like that, the F word, like kind of makes a lot of 80s movies age very poorly. Like I watched like Monster Squad, I think, recently, and I was just like, whoa, aggressive.
Yeah.
Aggressive with the F word.
Because they say it with a punch. Yeah. It's like,
ooh, it was a different time. Mm-hmm. I don't remember that from my time. But I watched it and sort of purposely looked out for, is there any sort of derogatory kind of behavior or like verbal abuse to anybody, like it's to Angela or any of the other campers? And there isn't. The only time is when Judy asks her why she doesn't shower with them.
Yes. And
but otherwise, it's not that kind of movie. Like, they're not making it
right
about that.
And if you think that we're going to talk about the gay undertones in this movie and not mention the I don't even know how you would describe him. He's a like an 80s like muscle head, like sort of what you would picture like a pair, like in The Simpsons when they draw gay characters that are supposed to be like porny, like they look like him. I mean, cloth shorts that are like, that look like they have the lining cut out of the inside. When I tell you that they're tiny, they're inside his body. They're thongs and skin tight muscle shirts. He's oiled.
Yep.
And the whole movie, he's just basically walking with his bulge towards the camera. It's always panned at his crotch. It's like, it's crazy.
His name is Ronnie in the movie. I knew I had that. That's why I was looking up character names. It's like, well, I know that we're going to discuss Ronnie.
Hey, Angela, I heard you hadn't eaten in 3 days. Are you feeling all right, Angela?
So here is something interesting. Let me tell me what you think about my theory here.
Please.
When Angela, it's the first couple days at camp, she doesn't talk. All she does is just like stare really intensely at everybody, very quietly. And she doesn't want to eat. Like, she hasn't eaten anything. And the counselor who's in charge of her is this chick named Meg. Mm-hmm. Super bitchy, and she gets frustrated because Angela won't eat and isn't speaking. Mm-hmm. So she goes over to the buff counselor Ronnie and says, like, what's wrong with her? She won't eat, she won't talk.
Yeah.
And Ronnie goes over, and you think that he's gonna go over there and make fun of her, like, because everybody's sort of starting to pick on her, and he's so sweet to her. He like kneels down, literally gets on her level.
Yeah.
And says, like, oh, are you okay? Like, what's wrong? You don't like the food? Why don't we go into the kitchen and see if we can find something that you like to eat? Now, he did accidentally leave her with a pedophile.
Yes.
But that's not what he intended. His intentions were good. And I thought, how funny that somebody who is presenting like hyper masculine feels this kind of unexplicable empathy towards somebody who's being forced to, or who's been forced to, present hyper feminine. And so is he sort of feeling some sort of empathy that he can't quite understand, because in some other dimension, in some other universe, Ronnie is almost got the opposite problem, where he maybe started out as a very weak sort of kid that was made fun of for being nerdy or girly,
right?
And he turned and he overcompensated by becoming this super buff, super powerful guy who has this authority figure who's an authority figure at the camp. But he still feels this like sympathy towards Angela, that he's protective of her because she's like the opposite side of the coin that he's on. I just thought it was interesting, like, he didn't pick on her, he wasn't a dick to her. They don't have a lot of scenes together, but in the couple times that they are together, he's always like a little protective.
He literally walks hand in hand with her into the kitchen.
Yeah.
It's like every time that you think this movie is going to take a left, it takes a right. Like, every character that you think is supposed to be some specific way, they're not. Like, you would look at him and think, like, here, he's going to be the bully and the one that like is probably mean to the kids, and he's probably going to, you know, sexually assault some fucking girl at camp or something. And he's like this total like sweetheart, and he does, like, he literally does get down on her level and, like, walks with her holding her hand into the kitchen. Yeah, I mean, I love him. He's one of my favorite characters in the movie, to be honest. He has really great dialogue too.
Yeah, yeah. And he's not a dick. He's not a dick, not just to Angela. He seems to be, like, a really good guy.
Yeah.
To everyone, all the counselors, all the campers, he's just like a cool guy. And that's not what you would normally get from that, like, beefcake in charge, like second in command at the camp, right, kind of guy. He would, in any other movie, he'd be an asshole.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's absolutely no reason that he's so nice. And he's just like, and in comparison to the actual, like, person, like the guy that's in charge of the camp, he's a complete dick and kind of doesn't care that kids keep dying. He's like, God damn it, it's making us look horrible.
He's got the mayor of in Jaws disease.
Yes. Oh my God.
Where
yes.
He doesn't understand, like, the humanity of it. All he's thinking about is, like, this is making us look real bad.
Yes.
We're going to lose all our campers. Because I think after the first few deaths go by, they can't keep it under wraps. And after, like, the third or fourth death, parents start yanking their kids out of the camp.
Yeah.
So at some point in the movie, they have to condense all the campers into just a couple of cabins because there aren't that many left. And that's one of the ways that, like, you know, the shower's full. So one of the girls has to go into one of the empty bunks to go take a shower. And that's where she ends up dying. Spoiler again. I mean, spoilers are out the window.
No, yeah, it's over with. I actually, speaking of the girls' deaths, I want to talk about Judy's death.
Can we talk? You will never look at a curling iron the same way again.
Okay.
And it's not explicit. It's implied.
Which is, again, I know I've said this already, but it's, like, one of the things that makes this movie so effective is, like, they understood the budget that they had. I mean, for being a movie that literally costs, like, $10 to make, like, I do think some of the special effects are really good. Like, the camp counselor, the chef, like, his, like, bubbling skin.
Yeah.
That was amazing. And it always makes me feel really weird. And, like you said, Judy's death is, it's all just sort of, like, shadows. But it's really effective.
You don't see a lot of it. You only see the very beginning, and the rest is literally all just shadow puppets.
Right. I have theories.
Go for it.
I have theories because, like, you know, like you mentioned earlier, there is that moment right before she dies where she's like, hey, Angela, why don't you shower with the rest of the girls? You queer or something? Or maybe you hadn't hit puberty. Like, she's, like, hitting her where she knows it hurts.
Right.
And there's just, look, I don't think it's coincidence that Angela chose to put a curling iron inside her vagina. I'm sorry. It's just, she could have chosen a million ways to kill her in that fucking room.
Well, and she was already suffocating her with the pillow.
Yeah, exactly.
She already had the pillow over her head, over her face, and was already killing her. And I think it was luck that the hot curling iron was within arm's reach.
Yes.
And she added insult to injury.
I feel like it has to say something about the fact that, for one thing, Judy is the most sexually active girl in the movie. She's the only person in the movie who I think actually has sex. Or no, does she even?
Well, it's implied that she's, if not having full sex, there's some maybe under the shirt type of thing, under the shirt, under the pants type of things happen. Right.
And they also make it a point at the beginning of the movie to say that she over the summer developed and now she's like a woman and she has boobs and she's supposed to be one of the most, like, developed girls at camp now. She's like the hot girl.
She's, and it's like the Stassi Schroeder of that camp.
Exactly.
Yes. All the girls want to be her. All the boys want to be with her. And let me see what your take on this, because Dr. Boyfriend and I, we were on two different sides on this one.
Okay.
He was wondering if we were supposed to get that Angela was, like, lusting after Judy.
Right.
I said, I'm a woman. I've seen and I've done that look on other women. That's almost more like jealousy.
Yeah.
And that's what you said, that Judy's supposed to be the one who developed into a woman overnight or over the summer. And it's talked about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, especially on a movie on such a shoestring budget, you don't waste film.
Exactly.
So they wouldn't have mentioned that if it wasn't going to be important later. Mm-hmm. So I think that Angela mm-hmm. is looking at Judy, like, almost upset. Like, how is this so easy for you?
Yeah.
Like, you're so, she's like the ideal of femininity to Angela. Yes. And that's also why that curling iron was also like a, you know, extra fitting, that she's angry that Angela, like, or Angela's rather, is angry that being feminine, it comes so easy to Judy mm-hmm. that she's gonna get her where it hurts, like, right yeah. in the femininity, the most feminine part, most feminine thing about her that we find out later Angela doesn't have.
Right. I agree with you. And I know that there's a lot of people, I've read theories online that a lot of people think that it's that she's lusting, mm-hmm. but I think it's
longing yeah. to see her, not to be with her.
It's like a single white female thing. It's yes. like not yeah. sex, like, especially because if you think about when that happens in the movie, at that point, Angela has been groped and mm-hmm. freaked out because she, you know, is uncomfortable with her body. And mm-hmm. she has this weird thing going on with this boy who, like, maybe she wants to go further with, but she, like, physically can't.
Right. She's
restricted by it, where Judy can just go get fucked by everybody and brag right. about it. And they're all talking about her big giant boobs that are growing and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think it's more of like a punishment.
Yeah. Like a punishment for, this is what you get for being the girl that I can't be.
Yeah.
That you don't even know if Angela wants to be, because she's been forced to be exactly. Angela.
Yeah.
And that was the other thing that we were discussing, was, are they trying to even bring in Angela's sexual preferences or sexuality into it? But mm-hmm. did she freak out with the boy that was, you know, flirting with her, that was kind of going to be like a camp romance with her?
Yeah.
Because she was afraid of being discovered, like, she could only go so far and then her secret would be discovered.
Right.
Or was she freaked out that she was responding sexually to a boy?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or was she just not into the boy? Like, that was kind of all the things we were saying, like, it's got to be one of three things. Either she's responding sexually to a boy, and technically she is a boy, she's physically male presenting,
right?
Just because she was raised to present as a female, mm-hmm. did that change her sexual preference?
Right.
Like, and I had said, I thought that it was more about being discovered.
I do. That's, I think so too.
Before her sexuality, before her sexual preference, before anything, it's the secret.
I think so too.
And that comes, like, everything else is like hidden behind that secret. So yeah. like we haven't even gotten to that kind of, in the blow pop of Angela's sexuality.
Yeah.
We're just at the outset. We're still along the candy coating. Like, we're not there. We're not there yet.
Well, I think that you're right, because I, like you said, there's no reason to waste film. Mm-hmm. And they do make it a point. It's honestly my favorite scene in the movie. They make it a point to show you that she does genuinely like him, and she mm-hmm. genuinely opens up to him, and he's the first person aside yeah. from Ricky that she even talks to at camp after like 4 days. She hasn't yeah. spoken in like almost a week. He's the only person that she spoke to, and there's just something about that scene where it just felt so genuine, like where she's like, good night. It's so sweet.
There's a scene during the day too, when, like, I think she's doing volleyball, like they're playing, the girls are playing volleyball mm-hmm. and the boy that's kind of flirting with her comes by just to say hi to her, and her whole body lights up. Like, she's yep. kind of moping on the bench because she's just watching them play volleyball. She doesn't want to play. And she sees him and her face lights up and her posture straightens up, and she's like, hi.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, honey, she's into that.
Yeah,
and
she likes him.
That might just be that it really was a young teenage girl maybe responding to feelings to a young teenage boy. Like, they're not that good of actors.
Right. Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah,
that's
yeah.
just IRL. Like, she liked him. But they kept it in the movie. And that's mm-hmm. what they used. That's the take they used.
Yeah.
So I think it's supposed to be that Angela really is. At first, maybe it was a response to kindness. Mm-hmm. That she warmed up to him because he was nice to her. But you don't light up like that for someone who's just being nice to you. That's like right. a crush light. That's like, yes. Like,
yes.
I like it. Ask yeah. me to that movie. Yes.
It's that thing where you're like, oh, you like him.
Yeah. Oh, it is an Angela Chase glow.
Perfect sure. way to put it.
Yeah.
Perfect way to fucking describe it. I also want to talk about, because it's like, so there's the undertone queer stuff in the movie that you kind of have to squint your eyes at. And then there's the surface level stuff that they choose to present in this, like, I wrote in my notes that it's like Hitchcockian almost. It's like, they can't just say that, you know, they're male lovers. So they have to show them in bed, like, petting. And then they, like, do this, like, it's like this weird dream sequence, like, way to present gayness.
Yeah.
It's really yeah. weird.
So they show like a weird flashback of Angela and Peter's dad with the other man that you see at the beginning of the movie. And they make it very clear that they were partners, they're right. lovers, because they are literally in bed together, petting each other. And there's no, like, you don't see any sex. You don't really, I don't know if they kiss. If they do, it's just like very just like nose to nose nuzzles. Mm-hmm. And then the two kids see them and like start doing the like hand over the mouth, like tee hee hee hee.
Yeah.
And they don't, I don't think it's supposed to be that they think it's weird. It's just, that's how kids would react to their parent, like seeing their parents kiss.
Right.
And it's just like, ew, a little gross, but a little yeah. kind of funny. And then the kids are sitting on a bed facing each other. The camera starts to go around, like this bed, it looks like the camera's spinning around the bed. And the kids start to fade into each other. Like mm-hmm. Angela's on the left, Peter's on the right. And then all of a sudden in the next shot, it's dissolved and they've switched positions and they keep switching back and forth, back and forth. And that's when they're like, oh, okay. That's a yeah. pretty, that's as kind of bare as those clues got.
Yes.
Did that you was know, the most direct.
Did you get, like, what did you think about that scene when you first saw it? The spinning background.
I truly did not go to, they switched places. I yeah. really didn't. I think that was just not anywhere in my head. I think I was so weirded out by the like petting.
You're right.
That was like, what the fuck is happening? It's still, how it didn't occur to me then. It's just, I think it's a testament to how good this bad movie is.
Yeah.
That even when it clobbered you over the head with yep. the like, they switched places.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You still don't get it. It's yeah. still not, it still wasn't clear to me. I think I was so like wrapped up in the weirdness and mm-hmm. so sort of like watching it like head cocked.
Yeah. You're just sort of on the ride at first. Yeah. You're just yeah. sort of on the ride and wherever and when, it takes you, yeah. it takes you.
When you're on the ride, it's hard to really get a feel for the whole thing. You're just,
exactly.
you're only seeing what's right in front of you. And even when what's right in front of you is presented as like the key to the whole plot of yep. the movie, you don't see it. You don't see it. You're too close to it and you don't see it. Yeah.
And that's Angela's dream, right?
It's a dream, I think. Yeah. That she has. And it's maybe how she rationalizes what happened to her. Like, you're kind of seeing her try to make sense of it, mm-hmm. I guess, because how on earth would you reconcile that?
It's so dark.
Yeah, it's really dark. And all of a sudden, like, well, it's at the end of the movie where with all those pieces that you have together with like the serial mom who I said was full Little Edie Grey Gardens energy.
Very much, very much, very much.
She should have been in like a leotard and like the American flag.
But, yes.
You know, it all starts to make sense. You're just like, oh, they showed me that. They showed me this.
Yep.
They showed me A, B, C, D, and E, and I, no idea.
Yep.
No idea that a dick was coming out. And Angela was really Peter the whole time, this whole time. And there was with the deaths. So almost all of them were like kind of water themed or water based. Judy's wasn't, but Judy's was almost personal.
Right.
And then Mel, the camp owner, Mel, was convinced that her cousin Ricky was the murderer doing all this. So at one point he grabs Ricky in the woods and starts beating the shit out of Ricky. And you realize afterwards that Angela killed Mel.
Yeah.
So those only two deaths that weren't based like, or weren't near or in the water. But those were the only two personal ones. The other ones were,
it was like circumstantial.
People, yeah, were people that had fucked with her and everything. But like the pedophile cook gets the big gigantic pot of corn water dumped on him. For no reason, by the way. All she did was push him forward towards a shelf that was steady.
He's like, God damn it, you little shit. Take me by my fingertips and take me down off this chair. It's like, just get like, down.
Your 2 feet are fully on this chair that's fully on the ground. Like, it's not unsteady in the slightest. But, you know, we suspend reality.
Yeah.
And he ends up pulling this huge pot of boiling water all over.
Have you ever seen a bigger pot in your life?
Okay, Troy, I am of the Mexican people, and once a year I see a pot that big when we make tamales.
Okay, I was like, this is a honey I shrunk the kids
this
pot.
This one was impressive. We personally don't have one quite that big.
It was amazing.
It was 3 feet tall if it was an inch. Absolutely. It is the biggest pot you might ever see in your life. But I mean, I've seen some very close to that in reality.
I also love that when he takes the lid off of it, it's like a witch's cauldron. It's like,
yeah, yeah.
And it would take hours to get it to boil, by the way.
It would.
No. Hours.
I remember looking at it and going like, that's so inefficient.
Yes.
You're never going to get that corn boiled for lunch. Yo. No. That's never going to work. Then there was Kenny, who was singing by himself under a canoe. He's, is he stabbed or drowned or, but whatever he is, his death happens in the water. Like, he dies in the water.
Right.
I can't remember exactly what they do to him, but he dies in the water.
I don't think they show it.
Yeah. But he, you know, he ends up dead, but he died in the water. And by the way, he never, his canoe flipped over. He never came out of the water and his friends fucking walked away.
I know.
They called him a dick.
I know.
His friends are like, fuck that guy, man. Because like, they're mad at him for not coming out of the water. Okay. If they just would have helped him, he wouldn't have died. But that's okay. That's fine. He sucked. So what difference does it make? And then there was...
There's the bees guy.
There's Meg, who died in the shower. And who somehow magically stayed upright against a flimsy shower curtain until Mel came in. And then she fell over.
Yeah. What the hell was that?
Yeah, again, we won't suspend reality. But then there's, I think his name is Paul, is the boy that was flirting with her.
Yeah.
And it happened on the beach, so near the water, but not on the water. Or not in the water, but near the water. And this whole thing kicked off because her dad and Angela died in the water.
Yeah.
But it's also like water and sexuality are sort of mixed in together, because in the beginning of the movie, the dad and the kids end up in the water because kids suck, and they went up behind the dad and like boot and like scared him, and he fell into the water and it tipped over their boat, and so they all fell in the water. But the reason they died is because two horny teenagers driving a ski boat.
Yep.
One with his balls out, by the way. Yeah. Boat, and it ran them over, like it rammed into their boat, and that's what caused their death. So like, it's like sex and water and tragedy or violence, maybe, all tied up in Angela's head. And they are, they were they trying to show that with like the some of the deaths? It doesn't hold up completely because there were some deaths that weren't water related,
but most of them are.
Most of them are. And it's the people who were mean to her specifically, exactly, that were trying to like abuse her, were the people that suffered those fates.
Right.
And then there was Mel, who was going after her cousin, who used to protect her, or who always protected her. And then Judy, who that shit was just real personal.
Right.
And then with her last guy, it doesn't show her murdering him, but they're found on the beach, and she, it looks like his head is in, like, he's like laying on her lap, in her lap.
Ugh, I and hate his death.
She's like stroking his hair and kind of like rocking and sort of singing. And then when she stands up, you realize that only his head rolls off her lap because she's cut his head off.
She cut it off. I loved him so much too. He's my favorite.
He was very sweet. And I wish they would have shown, like, I assume she just snapped, or did
go ahead.
The reveal? Oh, no. Like, did he see the reveal that she was she was a boy?
Right.
And that he rejected her, or he reacted like I didn't like that.
Yeah.
Oh God. It's like my friend, the first time she ever saw an uncircumcised penis. She was like not a teen. She was like in her like mid to late 20s. She hadn't seen one before. And the guy like didn't warn her, because I mean, it's truly not something you need to be warned about. It's fine. But when he pulled it out, it was not hard. So it had the, like, you know, the turtleneck of it all.
Yeah.
And she was trying to have the sexy moment, and she did this. Like, she recoiled in horror, and then she like tried to recover really fast. Like, no, this is, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I love it.
He couldn't get hard. So is this the just like horror movie extreme where Paul was just like, ooh.
Right. Well, let's also not forget the fact that she killed all those kids, which the little kids.
Oh God, that's right.
That's like the dark. And I have heard the director say that it's his biggest regret. Like, even though the movie is like,
he would
never change anything about it, and he loves all of the weirdness, but that's the one thing that he would take out. And I think they tried to take it out, but they couldn't. And she murdered five or six babies.
Those little fuckers did throw sand at her
when exactly
she was being dragged into the water.
They did.
I am not condoning children being murdered, but in the spirit of this film,
she
only went after people who fucked with her.
Exactly. And there also is like, there's these other, I know we've been kind of mentioning it in passing, but it's like, there are these other stories in the movie that any other movie would like, I don't know, focus on. But in this movie, they're just sort of throwaway moments. Like the fact that the chef is a pedophile, and the movie opens with him talking about all the fresh chicken and how
he calls them
baldies. And he says something like, the other chef goes, what's his name's dad goes, those kids are too young for you to even know what you're talking about. And he goes, you're never too young. Like, or he goes, they're never too young. You're just too old. He's really creepy.
And he literally licks his lips when he sees young children.
He's like biting on a piece of straw and like twirling it through his fingers. Like, he's being really gross. And the movie, that's just sort of like a thing that's in the background of the movie, that this guy, that the chef has been like raping kids.
And everybody kind of knows and is
sort they all know.
Well, I mean, he makes really great corn.
It's very 80s.
That's what we discussed when we were watching it, because Dr. Boyfriend asked me, is pedophilia okay in the 80s? Like, and I said, I don't think it was okay. I think that this was like, I think it maybe was an attempt at very dark humor.
Right.
That just hasn't aged well.
Exactly. That's what it was. Yeah. He's supposed to just be like the the creepy chef that like says stuff that's kind of creepy and
because since he's the first death, there's not as much time to establish him as a villain. Like it's right. gotta be real fast. So he does something almost like he's gotta be extra bad
mm-hmm.
for you to not feel so bad about him dying or being horribly disfigured.
Yeah, and then there's also that one of the what's the other mean camp counselor's name?
Is it Meg?
Meg. That yeah. Meg is fucking the owner of the camp, yeah. this old man.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's just sort of thrown in there where she's like, hey, like, you're gonna, like, what about that dinner you promised me the other night? And he's like, whoa, okay. And she like is skipping to her camp to go shower to fuck this old cigar smoking man. Like, and it's just a little quick little moment of the movie where you're like, oh, okay, like
either something got edited out or it's yeah. just like it didn't land like that. It didn't make sense that like why is this like 16-year-old girl into him?
Right, it's weird.
I mean, I get daddy issues, trust.
Yeah.
But that's like that's granddaddy issues. That's a
yeah. And like of all like the men at the camp to like
yeah.
hook up with, like what? Ooh. It's just so it's so random. I guess the other thing that I wrote in my notes that I did want to talk about, or I wanted to ask you your thoughts on. So I know that I mentioned earlier that the mom sort of took her own, you know, she made her own sort of creative choices, we'll say, with her acting and her character. Mm-hmm. Do you think that she made herself wackadoo crazy because only a woman who's wackadoo crazy... Like, that was just in her mind, like, I have to be like this because she obviously is nuts for doing this to this kid.
I think so, because kind of like with the cook in the beginning, she only has that one scene, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, they do show her again, like, in a flashback later, but she's only got that couple minutes to establish her character, and you have to, like, the audience has to believe that this happened, that
right.
somebody forced this little boy to grow up presenting as a little girl.
Right.
And the only way you can do that is to go full Little Edie.
Yes.
Like unhinged, because who else would believe it? And I guess that the idea is supposed to be that there's nobody else, like no other adult there.
Right.
Because they don't mention Ricky having a dad, or they don't, you don't ever see him at least.
Right.
So she only has that one chance to get you to believe that she could do that. That's what I figured.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, she just went full tilt. Like if the director let her just like, all right, you run with this scene, you do what you're going to do. The quiet, understated mom, like wasn't going to cut it.
I love that scene too. Cause it's like Ricky is looking at her like she's just like some batshit stranger. He's like, geez, mom.
yeah, like he's kind of like
you're too much for me. He's like uncomfortable.
He's very like Homer Simpson into the hedge.
Yes,
gif. That's just like, all right, look, I gotta go to camp.
And Angela's supposed to be doing her like looking through you stare, but I feel like she's genuinely doing it. Like the actress is like, I'm uncomfortable being in the same room as this woman right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. One of my other favorite things about this movie, and I don't know if you ever noticed it
okay.
as much as I did, that mustache.
Are you kidding? I look for it every time. I'm like, here we go. That one scene, the scene where it's close on his face and it is reflecting every light in America at one time.
I called it a controversial yet brave close-up of the stash. And again, this was filmed and meant to be shown like in a different era of technology.
Yes.
But
yes.
Even on a fuzzy black and white
right.
television, you would have clocked mustache. So there's a cop and he doesn't have a big part at all. He's just, you know, an ex sort of a, well, not an extra, he has a very small part in the scene where Kenny dies, I think.
Yeah.
So he's this cop who's supposed to be investigating, you know, the death. And he just kind of says, like, well, looks like he drowned, like must have drowned. And he's a kind of a good looking younger cop with a thick early to mid 80s mustache. Yeah. Very Tom Selleck mustache vibes. And then the director, for some reason, chose to do some reshoots, like to shoot some extra scenes, which added absolutely nothing. The scene that I saw, you can tell by the mustache, what scenes were added afterwards.
Totally.
It didn't seem to add very much.
Not at all.
The actor had already shaved off the mustache because he'd wrapped and moved on with his life. So he had shaved off the mustache. And since he couldn't grow a new one right away, instead of getting anything that resembled human hair, they put an actual like Lisa Frank sticker on this man's face and had the audacity to have a close-up of it. It's not hair, it's not fur, it's not texture, it's a sticker of a mustache on his face.
It's like two 301 drag lashes. Yeah. It's like Trixie Mattel's lashes. Just on either side of his nose. Like, it looks insane. It looks insane. And it's so... When I tell you it's shiny, I have to, like, look up a word that means it's more glossy. Than shiny. It's literally, it like...
high gloss reflective. You can see your own confused expression reflected in this mustache.
It is insane. It looks like Captain Planet is about to come out of his mustache, like all the rings combined on his face. It's fucking nuts. And he's cute. He's really cute, too.
He's so cute. They did him so dirty with that mustache.
Yeah. And it's like his legacy in the movie. Yeah. It's his mustache, how bad it is. It's what everybody knows him for.
I should have looked him up to see like if he went on to keep acting or something. I tried to look at some people and like I think like some of the main kids still do like they've been in things and are still really well known.
Yeah.
For their good sports and like have kind of carved out this little sort of horror convention living. Yes. Which sounds like a dream.
Yeah, I actually was gonna go to there was a horror convention near me last year around this time, obviously, that was like very Sleepaway Camp heavy. And Angela was there. And she's like a real horror movie convention circuit gal. Like everybody knows that Angela will be there. And she just seems, the actress seems so bubbly and sweet. And like, she's just got the biggest smile. And she's just so like, oh, I want her to swaddle me. So one day I have to meet Angela.
It'll happen. I think it will.
I have to meet her. I don't know. I'm trying to think of anything else that I have that I really need to get off my chest about this movie.
I just think that it ends up being surface level, just a fun, campy camp movie.
Right.
But so much, like still water, campy waters run deep.
Yes.
And I truly don't know if this is what was intended or not, but it's almost better if it wasn't intended because it's almost like the message and the layers came out regardless of how silly this movie maybe was intended to be or kind of how slapstick it got put together.
Yeah.
But like I told you before, Dr. Boyfriend works with the LGBT community. And specifically with a lot of trans women at his work. And this was one of the things he said. He's like, I think we have to really, like, he's like, I know it sounds ridiculous, but I think people should really be asking, like, is this going to end up being almost like a Criterion movie for like trans sexuality? And like, let's try to think of another movie where something like this happened. And it's really like, the closest you can get is The Crying Game.
It's true.
And like I told you, like The Crying Game owes this movie like lunch and drinks.
Because it's true.
I didn't know about this movie. And, you know, and when I first saw it, I was like, holy shit, that's like a Crying Game. I was like, oh, wait a minute. No, it's not. The Crying Game is it's a like this. Camp.
Exactly. Yeah. It's true. And it is a movie that that sticks with you, especially the few, like, the days after watching it for the first time. It really has this, like, lasting effect where, you're, like, you just... Because it's like you said, like, you're thinking in your head, like, am I making things up about this movie or were they intentional? I think that's sort of everybody's takeaway. Like, what right. in the movie is intentional and what isn't? And nobody really knows. And that's, I think, one of the greatest things about it. It's like, we'll never really know. And it just leads people to think deeper and deeper and deeper about it. And yeah, it's just, it's shocking that this movie that sort of means nothing also means so much.
Yeah. I think it's great. I think it's like a one in a million movie. Like,
yeah,
it's so bad. It ended up being so good.
Mm-hmm.
And then has all this depth to it that may or may not be have been intended.
Yeah.
And maybe what the audience reads into it, but it's still there. It's totally. You know, even if we're putting it there, it's still making people think this and it's still bringing those themes up. I really hope that people who haven't watched it watch it in droves. It's a really good, bad movie. And this is exactly when I want to watch horror. Like, this is exactly what I want to watch.
Couldn't say it better myself. This is it. Like, this is like, this is the kind of horror that I want to watch all. I'm always yeah. looking for movies that are like similar to this too. I always find that I'm like, because if you think about it, if you think about the categories that this movie falls into, it's, I guess you could say that it's like a slasher movie. And it's like sort of like it's like the dream slasher movie. It's an 80s movie. It takes place at a camp, whatever. But it's also a campy movie. And it defines what camp is, mm-hmm. you know, like it, because none of it's intentional. So it's like, it literally is the purest definition of camp.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, it is like this cult movie, and it also defines what it means to be a cult classic, because to some people this is canon. Like, to some people yeah. this is one of the greatest horror movies of all time.
Yeah.
This is a movie that you should see before you die. And then to other people it's a shitty movie that sometimes pops up on Amazon.
And the truth is it's both.
And it's both.
Oh, it's both. It both can exist at the same time. I really do think it's probably one of my favorite, if not my favorite, horror movie.
Agreed.
It's not done well. Not all of it ages well. But what was done well
mm-hmm.
is like top notch. And what has aged well, like you said, the cooks burn, like that yeah. special effect, because it's just a practical special effect. I think they said that they had him against a board that looked like the floor. So he was actually just tilted just a little bit, and they had hoses running behind it. And that's how they made the skin bubble up. So it's all just practical effects that it's like, yeah, booze. This was like 1983. You ain't got
yeah.
no CGI. You can tell by Kenny's fake ass corpse. Like, there's no CGI.
Yeah.
The absolute kind of blackest of black humor with the curling iron.
I mean, know.
So fucked up. And there have been some movies that I don't respond well to when there's like the kind of violence that's almost like picking on women. Like,
yeah,
there's some scenes like Nightmare on Elm Street where like claw in the bath with the girl with her legs open. That's yeah. almost like a, I mean, I get it. It's a shocking moment, but like, as a woman and someone with a vagina, I could do without it. That's like actually a fear I have to live with day to day. I got to walk around with that,
exactly, that
type yeah. of fear anyway. I don't need to see this in my escapism.
Yeah.
But a lot of horror, a lot of film is so male voice.
Right.
That on rewatch, when you watch this, you realize the spin that's on this. Again, whether it was intentional or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that women aren't a part of this movie. Women very much are a part of this movie, but they're just not hypersexualized. And yeah. it's turned it on. It's the way that you're like the experience that you get watching this movie where you're sort of like tilted on your axis. It's the same thing. The plot worked the same way. It mm-hmm. took what was supposed to be like, this is the way camp movies go. The girls get naked, the boys get boners. And it kind of like,
yeah.
nope, like let's turn it just a little bit. And that's probably why it feels a little uncomfortable, mm-hmm. but your discomfort works with the experience of watching the movie. And I don't know that I can name a lot of movies where that's done successfully.
Totally agree.
And it's like, again, like, did he mean to do it? Did he not? I don't know. But here we are. Like, you know, if this many people can't have this kind of reaction to something that, where there isn't anything there.
Yeah, I mean, it's like studied in like film classes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like people will, I mean, this movie's legacy will always be people trying to pick it apart and figure out all the things. And like, I think everybody who watches it thinks they like have pinpointed the thing, but it's like everybody's version of it is like kind of different.
Yeah. I mean, I'll still have rewatches after rewatches of this because mm-hmm. there's still questions. It's like, well, I know what my feelings are, but
yeah.
Maybe at another watch, I'll find something that's like, well, you know what? I used to think this, and now I kind of think this.
Yeah, I had that even this time. I mean, I watched it today, and I was like, well, maybe that means that. Or maybe the mom is that because of this. You know, like, it was just like, it's like a Rubik's Cube.
Right. Oh, so good. It's so good. It's on Amazon.
Yeah.
You can probably also find, you know, YouTube, right?
Yeah.
I recently watched Pump Up the Volume start to finish on YouTube in like 4-minute clips that some genius put together in a playlist that was seamless. I love Pump Up the Volume. It's like another good, bad, so 90s movie, but that's a tale for another time.
I feel like I should also say, since you brought up YouTube, that there's a really good, if you guys have seen this movie and it like means something, I know a lot of people listening to this movie means a lot to them, and there's a really good documentary on YouTube. Just if you just look up Sleepaway Camp documentary, it's the first one that pops up, and the director's in it, and Angela's in it, and Ricky's in it, and all of the kids are in it. And there's just like so many, I mean, as interesting as the movie itself is, like the making of the movie mm-hmm. is even more fascinating. And it's just like, I don't know, it just, that adds a whole nother layer to it, like knowing all of the things that went on behind the scenes of making this movie. And, you know, what it meant for these kids when it came out, like in their little Jersey town going to the movie theater. And, you know, it's just, it's good. So if you guys love this movie, you should watch that. And yeah, I don't know. I'm so happy that you did this with me.
I'm so happy that this was the movie we landed on. I love it. It was like perfect timing. I could do this like literally every day of my life.
I know. I love talking about movies and TV with you. We have to find it. Text me some other horror movies that you like, just like a list.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
For sure.
Oh God. It's going to be horror movies and, spoiler alert, wedding venues. I haven't even told a lot of my friends yet.
Yes.
Married.
Yes.
I'm living fully Carrie Bradshaw.
You are.
I am going to be a mid-40s bride.
And I'm about to be a... like an internet version of what's his name. What's your friend's name?
Stanford.
Yeah, I'm gonna be your internet Stanford.
With my pink mod cloth dress that like me and thousands of other gals have worn. That's fine.
I'm also, by the way, I haven't even said this on the podcast, but like I'm incorporating thrillers into horror, into spooky season, because for me that works.
I think it works. Yeah.
So even if you have like a thriller that you'd like to do, like we could totally do that as well.
Thrill chills. I would love. Yeah.
Well, tell people where they can find you and your podcast and stuff.
So I co-host a podcast called The Bottom Bible. It's kind of a funny take on like pop culture, sexuality, kind of relationship stuff, personal things. That kind of, we run the gamut. And we're The Bottom Bible everywhere. Instagram, we never use it, but Twitter. And on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, everything. It's always The Bottom Bible. And we put out new episodes every Tuesday.
And I was in one. You guys should go listen to it. It was great.
You absolutely should go into it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I love you. I'm so happy that we got to do this. I missed recording with you.
Oh, I love you too. Literally anytime. I'm going to text you my wedding venue ideas.
Please.
And thrill, chill, and horror picks.
Please give me something to look at while I eat on my couch right now, please. Oh. Yeah. All right, Vanessa, thank you.
I'll see you. Bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to Dunzo. This podcast is a part of the Solid Listen Network. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe if you haven't already. Also, be sure to check out our Patreon at patreon.com/solidlisten for exclusive content. You can follow me on Twitter at Troy McGee, and you can follow the podcast on all forms of social media at DunzoPod. That's D-U-N-Z-O. Thank you to executive producer Molly McAleer and coordinating producer Nicole Matthew.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.